Good afternoon and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I am Dan Eastman, your host. Today is Wednesday, September 6, 2023. And you are watching us on WVW TV. Thank you so much for tuning in. We really appreciate you watching our programming. As you know, the programming that we do on this network is commercial free. And there's no paywall, and you don't have to subscribe, so you're able to watch our content for free. And we can do that due to the very kind and generous donors and sponsors that we have on this network. And I'd like to thank my sponsor for this show, Swiss America, and the Swiss America Trading, which is, as I like to say, a fine purveyor of precious metals. They're an American company based in Arizona, and they do, in fact, make a market in precious metals. And if you're interested at all in adding tangible precious metals to your individual portfolio, you might be looking around for a strong partner and a strong vendor to deal in that space. And I would strongly suggest you give Swiss America a call. They can be reached at 1-800-519-6271, or you can go to their website. And if you go to their website, SwissAmerica.com, and you use the promo code EASTMAN, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, you can request them to send you some free information on how the precious metals markets work and what the risks are, what the benefits are, and then you'll be able to make a decision for yourself whether to invest in tangible precious metals. I say tangible because what that means is when you buy precious metals, let's say a gold coin or a bullion or a collector coin, you have it in your possession. It's a bargain for exchange. You've given them money and they give you a gold coin. And of course, the idea is that you're investing your hard-earned dollars in a gold coin or a silver coin, whatever tangible asset, and you own it, you hold it, you have to store it, you have to secure it, but you own it, and it's in your possession. And you know, possession is 9/10 of the law, said some legal wag at one point in time, probably a bench. But at the end of the day, if you have it in your possession, you own it, and that's a way to protect yourself from inflation or hyperinflation and other economic disaster. So if you're interested at all in adding precious metals to your individual portfolio, give Swiss America a call, 1-800-519-6271, or go to the website, use the promo code Eastman, and they'll be happy to send you some great information on precious metals. So let's jump into today's news stories. There's a continuing current under the American economy that I think is really worth noting because it's one of these systemic events that is going to have some rather large blowout as time progresses. And of course, I'm talking about the commercial real estate market and how banks who have lent into the commercial real estate market are now very much concerned about the quality of their assets, their loans that they made to the landlords and owners of these buildings. So let's peel that back a little bit. That's part of the program that I'm trying to achieve, is to get my viewers to be critical thinkers and start looking past the headlines and start analyzing the news stories from a deeper perspective. And of course, CRE or commercial real estate is comprised of a number of different real estate investment vehicles. One, of course, you can think of as a commercial real estate would be a strip mall with retail stores, a commercial real estate. Another would be an office tower or an office building. Another could very well be a manufacturing facility or a warehousing facility or something that's used in commerce. And then again, there are apartment buildings that are commercial real estate. Now, we tend to think of apartments as residential, but when you look at the world of mortgages, what you'll find is there are different financing silos that exist. What we would do, if you buy a home and you take out a mortgage, what you will do is you purchase the home and you'll take out the mortgage, and that means you sign a bunch of papers and they do a big background check on you and they decide whether to lend the money to you to buy the home. And then, of course, that mortgage note, because of the way the mortgage markets have changed from the 1940s through today, these notes are virtually all syndicated. It's a fancy word for it, are put into pools, gigantic billions of dollar pools of mortgages. And then those pools are sliced and diced into little units, and pension funds, mutual funds, other institutional investors buy these little units And they securitize it. They take these mortgage notes on your home and they turn it into a security for big institutional investors to buy for their portfolios. So it's a very standardized process to get a home mortgage. And some people kind of chafe from time to time at the restrictions. It's sort of the very narrow bumpers, and you have to go bump your way down that alley to get to the mortgage money so you can close on your house and move in and pay your monthly payments and live happily ever after. But it's very structured, and it has to be, because the standards for these pools, these syndication pools, are uniform. So they can't have some notes doing this and some notes doing that, even though that's what happened in 2000, precursor to 2008. The mortgages notes weren't as standardized as everybody had believed. Well, now they're very, very standardized, because we saw the blowout from 2008 and what happens when you pack these gigantic securitized instruments with all these mortgages, half of which are defective. So that's why it's very, very normal to experience the same thing when you buy a house with a mortgage. And it's for everybody, it's kind of the same thing. It's a very democratic process where everybody has to go through the same crucible. You pop out the other end a happy homeowner, and your mortgage note ends up pool somewhere where somebody's pension fund is the beneficiary of your convenient monthly payment. And that's the way these things are structured. Not so with commercial real estate, for a whole lot of reasons. The syndication world hasn't come to commercial real estate to the same intensity. Now, there are pools of commercial mortgages and investors and hedge funds and big investors buy into them, but it's not standardized. The purview or the provenance of commercial real estate lending has always been local and regional banks in the United States. So if you want to buy a commercial building or build a commercial building in Wisconsin, you're going to go to one of the regional Wisconsin banks or Midwest banks, and you're probably going to negotiate the loan. And that loan, instead of being syndicated, there's a very good likelihood of that loan will stay on the books of the bank that made the loan. Because keep in mind, as banks are attracting deposits, they have to find something to do with the money, because the whole banking world is driven by intermediation. Big fancy word, intermediation. You know, like, go to graduate school in economics, teach you big words. But what it means is you take money in for 3% interest, you lend it out at 5% interest, you make 2% interest profit, and that's your business model. Okay. So when banks, especially local banks who drive by your site every day, and the banker can keep an eye on it, you know, make sure it's still there, and the lawn's mowed and the flowers are, you know, trimmed. The point is they use those extensively for their own balance sheet. Because as money is coming in from depositors, it has to be invested somewhere. And that's why commercial real estate loans are not 30-year mortgages. That was a construct that came along primarily after World War II. Because in America, if you were going to buy a house before World War II, you need cash, you know, and houses were like $5,000. I mean, you could buy a little house and, you know, you pay cash, and, you know, it was like buying a wagon or a horse or a car or whatever. But after World War II, of course, the economy and the political system changed forever. And the idea was, how do we get all these returning service people, which is going to create a massive flood of unemployment, and then the economy is going to go right back into the Great Depression, and we're going to be doomed. They said, no, let's stretch this out. If you can make 30 years of convenient monthly payments, then you can pay a little bit each month, and at the end of 30 years, you'll own your home free and clear. And everybody's like, yeah, it's a great idea, because people tend to buy homes and they do two things. They tend to take care of them when they own their own home. And they secondly, if you're going to skip a payment, your mortgage is probably going to be the last thing you skip, because you don't want your house sold out from under you and you end up out on the street. So there's a real incentive, a psychological incentive, for Americans to buy homes with a mortgage and make those payments regularly. Of course, when you tie that into a credit score mechanism, where if you're late on your mortgage payment, they ding you, then it becomes a real stable thing. So you can bundle up all these house mortgages, these notes, and you can put them into a big securitized pool and sell them off to the pension fund, because the people that are paying those mortgages, by and large, you know, 96%, 98%, 95%, you know, depending on the economic cycle, 95 plus percent of people pay their mortgage on time, and they keep it current because they don't want to lose their home. And that means losing, you know, losing basically the roof over your head, as well as equity in your property. Now, keep in mind, you're not going to lose all of your equity thanks to that lovely 94-year-old lady in Minneapolis or St. Paul earlier this year that won that case at the Supreme Court, where if you don't pay your taxes and the city seizes your property, they can't keep all the money. See, they have to pay the back taxes and give you the rest. But your bank will be in there next. See, first the city gets its money, then the bank is getting its money, and whatever's left is yours to keep. That's why people don't want to go through this, and that's why people pay their taxes, their property taxes, and they pay their mortgage, because you just simply don't put your home at risk, and you won't probably put your car at risk as well. So anyway, when you look at commercial real estate lending, it's really a localized phenomenon, and that's throughout the country, and that's why you don't have 30-year terms. You have 3-year or 5-year note, maybe a 7-year note on a commercial building. And then effectively, you can structure these so that you're only paying interest to the bank. Because the bank's only worried about the interest. See, that's their revenue. That's what they use on their income statement to drive revenues. And they don't really necessarily want the principal back. They'd rather have all your money as revenue, interest payments. And if you can just have an interest-only loan, which was very common in days past, a 5-year interest only, or a 7-year interest only, or a 3-year interest only, bank just wants the interest, and then when the 3 years or the 5 years or the 7 years is up, they will refinance. And what they'll do, what that means, if the bank is going to refinance its own loan, they'll look at the current interest rates, and if rates are up, well, they tweak you a little bit. If they're down, actually, you can refinance at a lower interest rate, and that makes the property owner happy. Now, they're not amortizing the loan principal. It stays the same, whereas with your house, if you amortize it over 30 years, you make your monthly payments for 30 years, and at the end, make the last payment, you're debt-free, right? You own your home free and clear. Not so with commercial real estate. It's very unusual to find. You can. I mean, there's always an exception to the rule, but the vast majority of these loans are effectively interest only or balloon payments, as they call it. There might be a little amortization, but the banks don't want the money back. They want to earn the interest. So at the end of the 5 years, you have to refinance. And while you're not building equity through the repayment of debt and reduction of your outstanding debt balance, you're in a hot market, you're gaining equity through appreciation. So if you buy a property for $1 million and 5 years later, it's worth $2 million, well, you know, you pay the $1 million back, you're $1 million to the good. That's the commercial real estate market. And that's a sophisticated market that, you know, sophisticated players play in. I mean, look at President Donald Trump. I mean, he was very good at this because he's a commercial real estate guy and, you know, legendary in his expertise. But yet in New York, he's one of many very good real estate tycoons who basically know how to work this system of building properties with short-term debt, and then refinance. And of course, if you look at it like an elevator, and you buy your first $1 million property, and you got $900,000 in debt, and then you roll that, and then your property's gone up, and you roll that $900,000 in debt, at some point, your equity is very big, and your debt remains $900,000, becomes less and less of the total value, which means your private wealth is increasing. And of course, if you're doing this internally, there are tax advantages to doing that. So, I mean, it's a great business if you can get into the commercial real estate business, only not today, because the commercial real estate, and I've mentioned this before, has taken a real hit since the COVID phenomenon. And of course, the more we learn about the COVID phenomenon, government's reaction to shutting everything down and making everybody wear masks and standing 6 feet apart, and this bizarre closing of things has done something that is very unusual in advanced societies. And what it's done is it has changed the public perception of how people work. I've talked about this. You know, in the old days, you drive in from the suburbs, you park your car for $130 a month or $300 a month in Chicago, and you go up in your tower, and then you work, and you come back down, and you commute home for 2 hours, and you just keep going like this all of your career, and then that's your life. With COVID, people aren't going to the office towers. They're working from home. They're working remotely, remote satellite offices. It is vastly, vastly, vastly cheap to house your employee base remotely. Because instead of having to rent Class A downtown space at $1,000 a foot or whatever it is, The guy's working off his kitchen table. What's the difference? If his productivity or her productivity levels remain high and the employee can work remotely, it's wonderful for the employee because they can do things, you know, they're not chained to a desk, they're not locked into a tower. And from the company's perspective, and we're seeing this all over, is that they are really, really eager to get out from under these commercial leases with these huge office space that are just sitting dormant because nobody wants to go back to that lifestyle. And with digital technology and everybody's got their iPhone or their, you know, their smartphones and computers and shop online and order food online and this and that, the world has changed and culture has changed. And if you can maintain your productivity and maintain your income, then you can live in some very nice small communities and nice little cute downtowns, coffee shops and all that stuff. And you don't have the nightmare of an hour and a half commute, go up into the tower and come back down, back out. I mean, people are finding that this is restoring their humanity in a great number of ways. So as a result of that, unfortunately, everybody who is loading up on office buildings, boy, they're kind of wishing they hadn't done that, because the idea of going to an office tower is becoming like a, you know, like a men's sport coat and tie. I mean, nobody's even wearing ties anymore. It's just gone. It's just gone. And I think that's the problem. I'm sure this coat will be next, but I'm doing TV. I got to have a coat. But the point is, the world is changing rather dramatically. And if you are a bank holding on to commercial real estate mortgages and the landlord is looking at 70% vacancy rate, so they can't give the space away, and nobody wants to rent space because nobody wants to do this anymore, then suddenly you've got a bunch of assets that are just not worth a lot of money. And when that happens, it's not affecting some syndicated pool somewhere, affecting, you know, big institutional investors. In many instances, it's impacting directly the small local banks. And that's, you know, the Jimmy Stewart bank down the block, because that was a very good and wise investment when they were made. But the world changed. And that's one of the things I think we're going to be dealing with, this COVID blowout, probably like, you know, 100 and some years ago with the smallpox blowout, or the, you know, the tuberculosis thing, or, you know, great wars that changed cultures forever. We are in a different world. And that's as a result of that, these banks are now starting to worry about something they're calling the doom loop. You know, if you don't refinance the loan, then you're not, you know, landlord's going to go broke and default, then you've got a default. So should you refinance it and pray that they can at least make the interest payments and maybe the world will turn around, everybody want to go back into towers or not? And then they're very much worried about this do loop, or this doom loop, where as they cut back on lending mortgages, then there are no refinances. Now, all is not as bleak as it sounds, but commercial real estate sales are down 74% year over year. That's a huge, 75% of that market is gone. And what that tells you is that the price of the properties that are for sale right now are low. So of course, you're always seeing this bottom feeding kind of bargain hunting entities that will show up to take a gamble, because there's, you know, there's still some value in a downtown office tower. Maybe it's not stuffed full of people working in cubicles, but maybe it can be converted to condominiums, which nobody buys condominiums, or perhaps apartment building that can be converted, and somebody somewhere will find the diamond in the rough or value in the train wreck. You know, they'll pick through the train wreck to find the gold bars that were in the last car or something. And that's what we're starting to see in this market, that, you know, this bottom fishing starts to happen. Of course, there are, in American history, there are a lot of stories of people who bought low and sold high. And this is a thing. And you have to believe that your downtown is going to be robust. It's coming back. It's, you know, it's better than ever. And fortunes will be made, because this is how the American system of free enterprise operates. That, you know, one man's trash is another man's treasure. And, you know, one man's disaster is another man's opportunity. But we're watching this because at the end of the day, you've got $3.6 trillion of financial exposure, direct and indirect. And that's like 20% of the deposits of the bank, which is you know, it's not critical. I mean, nobody's going to run out the door screaming, but you got commercial real estate loans is $3.6 trillion. And, you know, that's 20% of the money on deposit at banks. So it's starting to become a ratio thing that's getting to be uncomfortable. So we're going to watch this. It's not going to be a happy story. I mean, for some people, they're going to buy the bargain of a lifetime. The new millionaires and billionaires will be minted from the ashes of this disaster. But boy, the poor people who own buildings that can't refinance because banks aren't lending money to refinance, they have nothing they can do but go into default, which triggers a foreclosure and a fire sale. And if you look at some of the numbers in the big cities, San Francisco, New York, selling at 70% less than the value, the loan value, you know, that's a bad thing. And quite often, developers are careful not to have personal risk, but the way they structure these things, you know, in a normal market, it would make perfect sense. You take out a, you know, 70% loan on a popular office building, that's a great deal, you know. Well, when the world changes, and that's one of the problems with this COVID thing, it's not worked itself out yet. Of course, we're hearing rumblings that there'll be new COVIDs coming. Yeah, well, I don't think people are going to go as crazy the second time as they did the first time. I certainly hope not. I'm not. Of course, I didn't go crazy the first time either. But at the end of the day, you know, the world is a changed place. And I'm not sure it's probably, in my conservative perspective, a good thing, because 150 years ago, Americans were very self-sufficient, and they were entrepreneurial from the perspective of being a farmer, or perhaps a merchant, or a tradesperson, a craftsperson, and people took care of their own world. And I think with the advent of digital technology, we will see a digital modern version of that, where people are going to be much better able to take care of themselves and structure their lives that don't require this World War II command and control, you know, thing. I think that we've left that. I think that's not a bad thing in life. Remains to be seen how technology affects the democratization of the American public. You know, it's kind of interesting in Milwaukee, our school system is beyond abysmal. It's beyond a disaster. I mean, there are no words to explain how 90%+ of kids graduating can't read and can't do math. And you see that and you think, you know, it's interesting because all of these cell phones, you know, are busy pecking away. So at that level, people can communicate. And it's, you know, you'd rather having them, I'm sure, read Shakespeare or something important or at least complicated. But at the end of the day, you know, people do tend to take care of themselves. And it remains a question as to how digital technology makes life better for everyone, or does it enslave everyone? And I think we worry about that. That's why I talk about this digital currency wallet issue. You know, it's the most wonderful thing. My money's with the Federal Reserve. Well, what could be safer than that? They're the folks that print the money. You know? Except the problem is if they say, you know, you don't get to buy the can of soda today, or you're using, you know, you're using premium gasoline in your car, that will turn your money off. And that becomes a social problem. So anyway, a lot of interesting thinking going on about commercial real estate. But as you're driving through your town, take a look around. You know, you see these strip malls. It's not fun to see empty strip malls and empty buildings. But what it's telling you is there's a concept in real estate called highest and best use. It's been around for a long time. What's the highest and best use of the site? And the appraisers will look at that. And back in the old days, you know, That was a real driver. What is the highest and best use of this land? And it could very well be that the, you know, this you know, the pyramidalization of humanity is coming to an end, and it's going to flatten out and spread out. And I think that's a real boon to a lot of abandoned downtowns, at least in Wisconsin. Boy, it's small town after small town after small town, the downtown area, which is only a couple of blocks long. There are these Victorian little buildings. There's a store with a little apartment above it. And wouldn't it be wonderful to come and see, you know, people operating those facilities, living in those stores, and creating these little downtown areas surrounded by the countryside, little villages? Maybe sounds a bit romantic, but at the end of the day, we're in that zone. And I think that's why I watch this commercial real estate, because you either want to be a bottom fisher right now, finding the deal of the century on the old skyscraper that nobody wants to finance, or you don't want to be the guy that paid the premium for the skyscraper 5 years ago and can't refinance it. So anyway, I also want to talk a couple of other issues in the time I have. There's issues with rents right now because as housing markets are freezing up basically because the interest rates are very high and prices are high. And of course we have this big chunk of millennials with very high incomes, very talented people who are owning nothing and being happy until they woke up one day and said, I'm not as happy as I could be if I had a home in the suburbs. I really want to mow that lawn and get out there. So the point is, with this huge pent-up demand for housing, and nobody who has a house wants to sell it and go from a 2% mortgage to a 7%, housing prices have gone through the roof. And what it means is a lot of people are left behind. You can't get into the housing market. So you're renting. And what we're finding is they're renting more toward the suburbs to not be, in the inner cities or the downtown areas with the congestion and the high rents and, of course, violence and crime. What it's doing is it's driving up rents across the board. And that's a very interesting thing because there's also a story today, a big story about private equity. What is private equity in the 3 minutes I have left? Private equity means dollars that are pooled for investment, or you can be a rich person making your own private equity investments. But remember, there's equity, which means ownership in businesses, okay? And it's not public, like if you've raised money in the stock market and go buy properties. This is private, just groups of people with money, put it together in a pool, and they go out and buy real estate. And what these private equity guys have been doing, and it's really kind of troubling, it's big institutional money. And they'll go into a market and they will start buying up single family homes and they'll slap some paint on the wall, sweep the floors, and they rent them out. And because single family home rental is much more desirable than renting in a multifamily unit, a lot more privacy, people who have the means and the interest will much rather take a rent a house than an apartment. So what's happening is it creates a market for housing throughout these urban areas, where if you're a person trying to buy a home, starter home in these urban areas, you're competing against vast pools of international money, okay? And they bid up the prices because they know that there's a great demand for people who want to rent single family homes, and they're buying them at top dollar. They slap a coat of paint on, sweep out the floors. The renter moves in, pays crazy money for rent. But what it does is it sucks up all the available lower priced housing for people who want to get it in the game. Remember, a rising tide floats all ships. And in order for you to benefit from the rising tide of inflation, you need a ship. And what better ship than a single family home? But when you're competing against these national and international pools of billions of dollars where they own hundreds of thousands of homes across the country, you're basically boxed out. And from an urban perspective, that creates two things. There's fewer individual people owning homes, and people who own homes tend to be a little more invested in the neighborhood and in the community. And at the secondly, they don't take care of the homes. I mean, they run these things basically as warehousing people, but they don't fix things. So these houses deteriorate. And I don't know what they do. This is a new phenomenon, but I suppose at some point they'll start dumping these things. They'll be ruined. A lot of these homes are going to need a lot of work to clean them up. So what you have is yet another distortion going on in the housing market for people who are trying to buy homes. And I think it's probably good American policy that everybody would own their home instead of, except some people want to rent. But, the reality is anybody that wants to buy a home should. So anyway, that's what I want to talk about today. There'll be plenty more tomorrow, and certainly have a great day, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. Take care. Bye.